Concession number 27774, Mr. Ilya Suster, Reel 5. Now, we're talking about now, when you were in your early days as an interpreter, interrogator,
yeah.
What's the next thing you remember, or next story? You just, you know, we're in France, it's around about June
19th. Oh, in France, I remember many stories.
Well, tell us some of those.
Well, I will only pick something, one interesting one. So once we had advanced very slowly, and they brought a prisoner in, I think it was a corporal, and he said he was an Austrian. He was a deserter, and he said he would give me all the information I wanted. So I started interrogating, because I must interrupt, in that time we had a message, so we were working closely with, we used to call them air testicles, but they were air tentacles, I think, you know. Something in combination for that. And they wanted always information for targets, light targets to be. So I interrogated, and he showed me on the map where his B echelon, a B echelon, you know what that is, yeah? The B echelon, with all the ammunition and their probe. They were leaguered somewhere in some small road in France, you know. And normally when we used to give, Captain Mitchell used to do it, to report to these Air Force people, normally they say target rejected. And this was big excitement, target rejected. That is all. And next day, we used to get some intelligence reports every day from the division. They said very successful mission, B echelon was normally half destroyed or damaged. So that I remember very well, and we were very happy about it.
Any other stories that you remember from that time?
Is that a good one?
Yes, that's excellent.
Air tentacles, they were. Air tentacles. They were in typhoons, I think. That is one story in Normandy. Later on, there were not many prisoners we had, not many. But on and off, but that is one interesting one. Oh, yes, the one very interesting that goes before, they captured one Air Force man who worked in the where the bombs were coming from, in Plenemünde, it was called. And he told me, you know, I was a novice then, that was just the first day in Normandy. He said that he came from Plenemünde, and there are also the factories which produce they were going to produce the V1, you know. And of course, I didn't know what it was all about, and I asked Captain Mitchell to come and listen what he had to say, yeah. And I understand that it was very, they knew Plenemünde, the Secret Service, but this was very valuable information. And I understand that he was immediately taken by air to England to be further interrogated. That is the story.
Now, what was your life like in the headquarters? You know, what sort of thing were you doing? I mean, what was a typical day?
Well, see, actually, headquarters was not. It was just caravans and two trucks, and that was our headquarters. There was the brigadier, who was separate in what I call a caravan. Yeah, and there were two armored cars were protection, and then was our three-ton lorry where Sergeant Kendall was, and one corporal, and myself. And we were advancing, you see. So the interrogation often took place just in the field or somewhere behind a lorry. But we never touched anybody, and my instructions were really just to get information and nothing else.
Any other particular interrogations you remember from France, you know, the advance? Because you started moving forward rapidly in August, didn't you?
Hmm?
They started moving forward fast in August 1944.
Oh, yes, then it goes, well, then... Just a moment. June, you see, I wasn't the first. We were, the 7th Armoured was in reserve. We landed a bit later on the right. And I had a semi-armoured car. I was then with the Royal Engineers, you see. I was posted then
to
them. Yeah. That was in the first day, so... Well, at first it was all going wrong because they blamed Montgomery for this, that he couldn't take Caen, the Americans. They expected that Caen would fall very, very easily, but it didn't. So we were absolutely bogged down. And then suddenly, the Americans broke through Avranches, as you all know, and suddenly we started advancing because the Germans were encircled. Yeah? And then I remember we advanced very, very quickly to Rouen, first, that is France, and then to Belgium. And our brigade, they actually occupied Ghent. The others went, that is well, very well known. But there we didn't have many prisoners because they were all going, and my job wasn't very, very difficult.
What were you doing when you weren't interviewing prisoners? I mean, what was your normal day-to-day work like? Or were you just waiting for
there
something?
There was not, no, sometimes you waited for, not waited, you occupied yourself map reading, or they gave me always some books to learn more about intelligence, you know, German formations and all this. So at that time I was only, I think, a Lance Corporal, so I was just sitting very shy there with high officers, yeah. So Ghent, yes, I remember in Ghent, and then...
What do you remember about Ghent?
I only remember Ghent that one night I was ordered to be an escort to a brigadier, I don't remember. He was in a car, and I had to go more or less like his bodyguard when he was going into Ghent. But I do remember that in Ghent, in the last moment, our people had to fight still the SS, which was just across the river. You know, it's all the canals and all that. That I remember. But we had a very good time in Ghent at last, not for long.
In what way? What do you remember about Ghent?
Well, in Ghent, the people were very, very friendly, and we were all billeted. We could go first time. We were requisitioning houses, very, you know, and had a roof over our head. And then Ghent, and then after Ghent, Brussels. Brussels were others. That was the, I think that was the 11th Armoured, or Guards Armoured. We took Ghent. The suburb was, even I remember, Oudenaarde, that is where we came in. And then what was then afterwards? Ghent, that was Belgium. And then, oh yes, and then we started advancing fast into Holland.
And what do you remember of that advance?
Well, it was, I don't know, we were on the road, we were going quite well, there were very few prisoners, and suddenly there was a stop, and we didn't know why. And weeks we were waiting, you know, and that was the stop because that was the bridge too far. You see, so we couldn't advance at all. And then, of course, we didn't know what was happening. But in my opinion, I mean, in my small, it was a very big defeat. Absolutely. There's no question about it. That I think the general should have never done it because I saw the wounded and some dead. I saw what happened there. There were thousands, really. There was the cream of the British paratroopers were affected there. In any case, now it's my memories, of course, it's not easy to remember everything. And then, of course...
How did you get on with the Dutch civilians? Were you billeted with Dutch civilians, or what was happening?
Well, we had to us attached very shortly a Dutch sergeant, who is even in the book, and, of course, he was a good liaison. He spoke good English, German, and Dutch, yeah. And we had good relations. I think the troops had good relations with the Dutch, I must say. Because I remember Christmas, we were in South Holland. The place was called Galeen, and it was Christmas. And I remember they organized the Christmas party, that is the brigade. Yeah? And the Dutch girls were all invited and attended. There was no problem. And there was quite a good relationship with the Dutch. And that was then Christmas when we were sitting there, and then suddenly we heard Ardennes, the Ardennes offense. But you see, we were terribly lucky. We were on the right. If the Germans had broken through there, it would have been a more disaster in Holland. Yeah? And then I've got quite some interesting story to tell. We were very, very near the German border after a few days. And there were three villages there, Posterholt, St. Quertilenberg, and the infantry had to take it. And I had actually the job, it sounds quite odd, to take the jeep, my jeep, which I had to take the jeep, go behind the lines where they would be attacking, and wait overnight, it was, in a chicken shed for prisoners. So I was waiting there, and early morning, one of our donors, dispatch rider, arrived with a German prisoner, and he was a corporal of the Pioneer Corps. The Pioneer Corps in Germany, pioneers different like in England, that was engineer, like our Royal Engineers. And he said he's prepared. He was completely frozen. We had snow already there. He was frozen. I was on my own there. But I had to stand down and had a hand grenade. And I had to tell me, he said, one thing I'll tell you. He told me he's engineer. We have laid box mines in that village in front. And he had the plan of that. And he said he's prepared to show me where they laid the box mines, because he didn't want that civilians on this would lose legs. So this is a story. So I said, then I got really anxious to get the information. And incidentally, the people who were there, the Royal Engineers, I was with them in Italy, you see, with the Royal Engineers in Italy. And I wanted to start the jeep, but it was cold, the jeep wouldn't start. So I decided we run for it, run to them. So he was running in front, and I was running behind. But that story has been doubted, but I tell you it's the truth. And when we were running over the snow, suddenly I saw the commander, Major General Lyon, was coming out from the right. And he stopped me and said, listen, Sergeant, what is news on the battlefront? Sarcastically, you understand? Yeah. So I told him, he said, well, carry on. So I left. Now when I arrived in that village, I think it was Posterholt.
Now, how do you spell that?
Posterholt. Posterholt. And when I arrived there, our engineers, they were smoking there, lying all around smoking cigars. And one said to me, Ill, you're too late again, too late. Right, it wasn't, it was tragedy, because after about 7 or 8 or 10 years, I visited that village, and the farmers told me they've missed one teller mine or something, and two boys were blown, their legs were blown up. That is my story about that. So we are now the border just nearly in Germany. And there's another incident that will definitely interest me. So certainly we heard that the Americans are taking over, and we should be prepared for movement from there. But before that, we will have an American delegation who will discuss with Brigadier Sperling the position, the takeover. And I was present, because we were there in a monastery there. They had the map there, and General Sperling showed him our positions. And there was a little corner there which was not occupied. That corner that was half in Germany, called Flodrop. Very, very small village.
Flodrop.
And the American brigadier said, do you know, we are not happy to take over as long as Flodrop is occupied. So I remember Sperling said to him, do you know, there's probably a small infantry, some company there of 100 men or 80 men. They don't worry us when we advance. No, he wouldn't know. He said, I'll give you a suggestion. He said, we have been very, very fortunate in Calais, where our loudspeaker surrendered the whole German division. We would like to try to come out with our loudspeakers and talk to them to surrender. So Sperling said, yes, if you want to, but I would like Captain Mitchell and Ilya, he called me then, to accompany you. They will come separately with a jeep. So to cut it short, we arrived there, and there was this huge lorry with quite unbelievable instruments like this. And they started talking, I must say, in excellent German, very well, very optimistic, but otherwise well organized. And they broadcasted this. But you know, it was so loud you couldn't believe. German soldiers, we are here, the Americans take over, or something like this. You will be all treated very well, you know, the usual bull. And surrender, because we have thousands of bombers coming and all this. In any case, it started getting dark, quite darkish, and suddenly we saw, you know, like a mist comes up, and suddenly we saw movements coming and some bells like this, and then this, oh, they're coming, they're coming. Dutch cows were going, you know, home. So Mitchell and I said goodbye and we left. Of course, they didn't surrender, but the Americans took it in a second. I thought that's a good story, the cows.
Now, what about your relationship with Sperling? You've not actually mentioned Sperling before. When did you first meet
Sperling? Yes, that was in Holland. He came to us in Holland.
Now, what were your first impressions of Sperling? Because he was going to import, what's his first name, by the way? Brigadier?
What? John.
John Sperling.
JMK.
Now, what were your first impressions of him?
Because incidentally, my wife has looked up who is who. She's got all the career. Yeah.
What do you remember of him? What were your first impressions?
We were all, you see, lined up. We were in Holland, lined up and introduced. He was always very pleasant, you know. And he has not been in Africa. You see, he was not an original 7th Armored Division officer.
He was taking over command of 131 Armored Brigade.
That is correct, yes.
What was he like in
Holland. Well, I must say, in the first days, in the first month, I didn't have that close contact with him, you know. I mean, had very little to do with Sperling. Only it started here with this story. That was the first
time. How did he know your name? You must have started to know him before that.
When was that, yeah?
You said he called you Ilya.
Well, he must have seen it.
Whatever.
Yeah. But in any case, it may be that I was wrong there. That was too early. Yeah?
That is possible. I understand what you're saying.
That is possible. Now, you see, I must tell you, once or twice we had very bad brigadiers. They were removed. One of our brigadiers, when we landed, he was shortly removed.
Why was he a bad brigadier?
Well, that is not for me. I couldn't judge it. All I know that he was removed. Yeah, I wouldn't say even. I wouldn't like to pass an opinion. Yeah. I think it was Vernon.
What was good about Sperling?
Well, at first I can't say anything good because I never saw him in action or did this. There were no orders, and it started only. The first time we had close contact is when he sent me with Captain Mitchell to that council. He was really pleased what I said. Also, that with the interrogation with Ingeline, yeah, that impressed him. Yeah. In any case, then we, from there, one day we crossed the Rhine.
Now, what do you remember of crossing the Rhine?
With Wesel. I must say, all I remember that it was all the roads where we were facing to the Rhine on both sides, they were all packed with ammunition, guns, all the roads were full, and we went along there, and when we crossed, there was no problem. We just crossed into Germany.
Did you go across one of the pontoon bridges, or?
You know, it wasn't a Bailey bridge, no. It must have been, it was at Wesel, we were not the only ones, yeah?
And this would be March, would it, 45?
Yes, I think so, March. Not February, yes, March. And I remember when we entered that the first stop we had was outside a German like a castle. They call it a Schloss. And Brigadier Sperling requisitioned that.
Now, tell me about that. Did you have any part to play in requisitioning it?
I had the full part to requisition it. But then, of course, there was still war, and I wasn't alone. I had an escort as well.
Now, how did you go about it?
I just asked for the owner, and there was a woman, very, very unpleasant Nazi woman. And I heard that her husband was in Russia. He was a colonel, I think, So we requisitioned, I must say, I requisitioned for General Sperling on the first floor, a night bulk room. And then downstairs, some of the brigade took over. Some soldiers came in. And Sperling said to me again, like he did in Hamburg, you go down, go to the wine cellar and see if we need a drink. Yeah? So I went to that woman, and she called her servant and said, well, give them some bottles. What do the English know about wines? She said. When I heard this, I said, well, we'll take your revenge. All we do, Sperling got his drink, and I got permission to clear the whole wine cellar into lorries of officers in the officers' mess. The sergeants got also a bit. And then it was signed, requisitioned. That was the end of the cast. And then, next day, they brought in a whole of prisoners. I would say there were section 3, section 20.
German prisoners.
German prisoners. And they were all from an officer's training cadets. And they all came, I can spell it to you. They were defending the Teutoburger Wald that comes in German history once the Romans lost a battle there. You know, it was very famous in German history. And they were all interrogated. They were all very, and then, of course, sent. There I had help. They sent a captain of intelligence from division to interrogate.
And what do you remember of those interrogations? I mean, a lot of people to interview. Were you able to get any useful
intelligence? No, you know, it was funny. I can't tell that. They were not. They were standing all in a row. But what I tell you, the German discipline, they had a German RSM. And I said to the RSM, line them up according to your platoons, you know? And he did it. Can you imagine? So when the intelligence officer arrived, he knew exactly who they were and what they... he didn't interrogate. It didn't seem very important. He seemed to be in a hurry, the intelligence officer. I don't remember who it was. It was not Captain Lindsay. He was for divisional.
So you didn't really interrogate them much? They were just held?
No, not much. Not much at all.
So what's the next thing you remember happening?
In Germany? Well, we were then in Germany.
How long were you at that Schloss?
One night. One or two nights, I don't quite sure.
And what happened next?
We advanced. You know, then I just don't quite remember, because not many things happened. But suddenly we heard that, and that is very unusual, but I heard that we are going to North Germany, and probably, that was secret, yeah? Hamburg. Of course, there I was very excited. And there...
Because that's where you'd lived in Hamburg.
Yeah, I lived in Hamburg as a boy, yeah? And I knew Hamburg well, and also the surroundings. And of course, I immediately told Brigadier Sperling about that, and he was very interested. And he said, yes, I will keep in close touch with you now.
So what happened then?
I was a sergeant then.
It
happened, you see, we advanced only very slowly towards the north, and then I remember only, I don't know, they were going. Bremen was going, that was that division. Lübeck was going, that was the, I think, the 11th Armoured, and the other was the Highland Division. Well, we went north, that means the first place I saw was Valrose. They were the small villages we passed through, and we stopped, I don't know how many days afterwards, not sure, in a place called Klecken. And that was just about a few miles away was Bergen-Belsen, the terrible camp, which our soldiers discovered first, you know, the infantry. I didn't want to go there and to see, but I had a job, and I think they were Montgomery's order, to get the civilians out of Bergen-Belsen, of the village, and they were paraded to see the camp. And that upset our soldiers and everybody, Sperling and the officers. Some were getting ill. They started, you know, getting sick when they saw all this.
But you didn't go to the camp?
I didn't go to the camp.
What about the villagers? Did you help get the villagers out to go and...
Oh, yes, they were there. Well, I had soldiers with me. Yeah, I had the seven armored soldiers with bayonet going in the house and getting them out. But that was high command order. Yeah. And I understand the others had to do it too. Some other units had to do it too. But I don't know much about it. I know only heard about it. But in the meantime, you see, there we start. Oh, yes, you said what happened. What happened? I've got it here.
No, they can't see that. Remember, you have to tell them.
No, that book. There you see when we advance, where I give every day a report in April. That is from here, this here. That one book I gave to the official, that is from the brigade, not division. You see, that is very interesting.